Hi, I'm Brooks Davis, and today I'm going to be talking about porting high-performance computing tools to FreeBSD. Just a little background. At the Aerospace Corporation, where I work, we've been running a FreeBSD computing cluster since 2001. It's currently 352 nodes. These are all dual-processor machines with between 1 and 4 cores per socket, and a wide variety of hardware. It's both AMD and Intel hardware. So in the process of building that cluster, we've ported a number of tools to FreeBSD. And so I'm going to talk about some of the things we've ported, some of the issues involved, and some of my general peeves about the porting process while we're at it. The three tools I'm going to talk about today are Ganglia, which is an open source monitoring package, SunGrid Engine, which is a batch queuing system, and OpenMPI, which is one of several implementations of the message passing interface, which is the leading interface for message-based parallel programming. So just jump right in. Here's a little screenshot of Ganglia. It's a little blurry on here, but basically you can see the basic graphs. There's a graph of cluster load, CPU use, memory use, and network traffic down below, as well as a little load pie chart. This was a brand new cluster, so with nothing running on it, so it's kind of boring at the moment. Down below these graphs on the main screen, there would also be per host graphs of whatever metric is selected up top. So by default, it's load, it's current 1 minute load, and it'll show lots of little graphs, which are very pretty until you have several hundred of them, try to load them over a slow web link. So the way Ganglia works is that it has a daemon that sits on each node and sends those nodes and then sends metric recordings to a central collector. Historically, that was done via multicast, which makes it very easy to stand up. You just start it everywhere, and the central collector starts reading data and recording it. And you basically, from there, you run the web server on the machine with the central collector, run the PHP code, and you're up. It also supports unicast, and I think that's actually default these days. So the various metrics cover both system configuration, as in things like hardware, processor type, amount of physical memory, and also load or resource use values. Some values, like operating system or CPU count, are expected to only be updated, are updated very infrequently on the assumption that they never change, whereas others, like CPU utilization, are updated frequently. The central collector takes all of these changing values, stores them in RRD tool databases, and then uses them for that for graphing and presentation. Not really in the presentation, but one of the interesting things with the RRD tool databases is that, of course, given the number of metrics with any large number of nodes, you either need, today you could probably use large flash, you could use flash, but previously, you basically had to store them in an MFS and cache them periodically because RRD is not designed to be updated, remarkably well. So each of the metric providers returns either a string or a numeric value. They're actually internally they're returned as a function that returns this giant union and then sets what type it is in a structure. Let's see. And yeah, so early versions, the one I did most of the work on, basically everything was hard-coded. You had this array of, here's all the metrics that this client supports, and in practice, if you didn't support enough of the ones that Linux supported, the GUI looked ugly. So my big challenge initially was to just get enough metrics supported that the displays made sense. Since then, things have been more pluggable. Because of the use of RRD, like other tools like SmokePing, if you change things too much in the configuration, you have to tear everything down and rebuild your configuration because there's no easy way to change an RRD database once it's created. But that is much more flexible, and there's actually now plugin, both Sybase plugin support and Python plugin support. So the general process for porting the traditional metrics is fairly straightforward. You dig around in the other operating systems, usually the Linux support code or the Solaris support code, figure out what on earth the authors meant by this variable, and then go in and you start digging through the source tree and trying to figure out, okay, so how do I get this value in user space? So in this case, I would look in top or PS. Prox, if I were doing it today, I'd look in Proxdat a lot. It wasn't there at the time, but it's got lots of handy collections, sysctl, the like, libkvm in some cases. And then, go in, read the code, read the man pages as necessary, and write the code. Basic stuff. This becomes easy because we have an open source operating system. Be a royal pain on a closed source system. One of the first, just to give a trivial example of a metric implementation, this is other than some formatting changes to fit it on the screen, the complete implementation of the code to get CPU numbers. It's trivial. You just have a value, and you have a length. You grab it through sysctl, the usual deal, and then shove it into the right value. And Ganglia, one thing about Ganglia is that they tend to use the smallest value they can get away with here because they want to keep the network traffic very low. I'm not convinced that this makes any sense given that we're talking about Ethernet packets, and they're padded to 64K or 64 bytes no matter what you do, but they've done this. In this case, it's okay. In some other cases, it's been a bit silly. Probably it's going to be a while before we blow out this 16-bit ant on CPU count, but who knows. Another metric that's a little more complex is the swap total and swap free. They're basically the same, so I think I only actually talk about one in detail. In FreeBSD, you'll get this information through the swap info command. Dug into the swap info support. Once I figured out it was actually in PSTAT, part of PSTAT. And one interesting thing here is that historically, PSTAT and swap info got this information using libkvm. And then I think around FreeBSD 5, we added a sysctl interface to it. However, I was porting to FreeBSD 4, so I ended up supporting both versions in the same code base so that the binaries would keep working on the new ones and on newer versions. And if libkvm changed out from under an old userland binary, the sysctl method would still work. So in this case, this actually shows the metric init function, which is a function that's called at the begin when the daemon starts up. And this is a somewhat reduced version that only shows the interesting bits for the swap stuff. Here I actually, as a micro optimization that probably doesn't have any point, I go ahead and probe for the whether or not the swap values are available, and then either open up if they're available, I just open up a null KVM command so I have a handle for some other cases. And if it's not available, actually go and open up open up a live dev KMM interface. Part of the reason for this is that if you have to actually go in and dig into kernel memory to get the results, you have to disable the you have to either patch the code to start to drop root privileges later, or just run as root, which is not desirable. So this was done this way because I was for a while having arguments with the team about when they can drop root, and then also just cache a copy of page size, which is also probably silly. This is the key piece of the git swap total function. It's the middle of it. Don't really need variable decorations. They're not very interesting. And in this case, we switch based on that value that I set in the previous slide, and we either get the values out with from MIB, or we use get swap info. It's actually a little shorter with the get swap info code, but works either way.
Can I ask you a good question?
Sure.
Should that code actually be moved equally to kill something?
This particular code? Probably not, because, I mean, well, maybe, it, but, yeah, whoops. So the get swap info stuff through the KV interface could easily just use sysctls, and I think does in recent versions, though I haven't read it. So there might be some argument for taking some of these functions that are in libkvm and moving them to libutil, or moving a wrapper to libutil, when you know that perfectly well they don't actually grovel around in the memory. Does? Yes, it does. It does tend to. Yes.
So this is probably done.
At this point, yes. I wanted some binary compatibility that wasn't going to be practical otherwise without the manual implementation. But probably not necessary at this point. This port is fairly old. So I would, at this point, rip it out because I don't care about 4 and doubt anyone is going to be compiling new ganglia binaries for it. Let's see. One other set of metrics, which will lead to my first pet peeve of the talk, is implementing the memory use metrics. In ganglia, they specifically have this memory these values of total, which is fairly sensible, buffers, cache, free, and shared. The problem is, for example, if we look at top, what we have in FreeBSD is active, inactive, wired, cache, buffers, and free. And of course, as we all know, free is pretty small. So there's a number of possible values. Here's some I picked. I probably could look at linprocfs at this point. I don't remember where we were on that at the time. And even total, you know, we have at least 3 valid candidates in terms of is FISMEM, RealMEM, or UserMEM, depending on what you actually want out of the value. The thing that really annoys me in general is that many ganglia platforms assume that they have some valid value for free memory that's truly representative of what an application could and should use, and that's simply not true. The reality is that if you in fact used up all that memory that's not allocated to applications, your performance would be abysmal because you would not be able to cache anything. Just as an aside, these sort of schema issues come up all the time. Memory use is a big one. Another one that's fairly common is I've never implemented the NFS statistics in ganglia that Linux implements because we just collect different values. Similarly, TCP and UDP, different systems track different things. Another example is that that ganglia has a disk usage metric, or a disk use into I think free metric size and free. So the question is, what's local? And that can be a real interesting question. Is a UFS file system local, for instance, if it's on a SAN with virtualized SAN? Even the obvious solutions may not be right. So it's just sort of an endemic issue, and something to think about when porting these things. I think if you wanted to come up with a solution of sorts, the best approach would probably be more flexible designs, for instance, where memory was very grossly categorized in a way that everyone could reasonably agree on it, and then break that up at a lower level. Paul Henning?
Actually, a lot of work has been done with this in the various days, and RFCs, so both results and so on. It might just be an idea to lean back on some of the stuff they've done, because a lot of thinking went into trying to make that portable across operating systems. The metrics they show, not use SMP, that's a lot of things, but the metrics they show.
Yeah, I've often had mixed opinions about what I've seen in there, but yes.
Very big quality, but some of it is actually pretty good.
Okay. So a second aside on Gangway, unrelated to the metrics, but a portability issue we ran into, is that FreeBSD deliberately, well, FreeBSD and actually all the Kame-derived stacks, as far as I know, deliberately violate the RFC for IPv4 mapped IPv6 addresses. We had a long and drawn out argument about whether or not Gangway was going to create the two sockets that are required to work on a BSD system. They were concerned that there would be other people who violated the standard in the other direction, and made it so that if you open 1v4 and 1v6 socket on the same address, that it wouldn't work. It turns out at this point, Apache Portable Runtime has been set up to handle this correctly, and in fact, there's a fairly significant section in the Apache manual which talks about how you have to configure your web server if you want v4 mapped addresses to work reliably. But this was definitely an annoyance. It wasted, you know, when they added v6 support to Gangway, it stopped working on v4 for a couple months while we argued about this. And I think it continues to be a barrier to portability on BSD systems. I don't really know what the right answer is, but I think it's something we should reevaluate. Yep.
There is a knob in both Linux.
Yes, I know there is a knob.
To configure that.
Yes.
And the only difference is that the default is different. So you just settle on which one you want to use, and that's just you set it onto that value on whatever you're running.
That doesn't address the general portability issue that people are confused. And I'll leave it at that. Yes? I would say Gangway is virtually unnoticeable. I mean, what it's doing is poking sysctls fairly infrequently. It doesn't collect data very often because it doesn't want to spam the network at a significant level. Even with our 300-node cluster, there was some code in the networking stuff for a while that tried to ignore the Gangway traffic on the network, and I took that out at some point. I couldn't even tell it was running. There was simply no, and the overhead of the rest of it is the overhead of gathering the statistics is going to be minimal. So I'm going to move on now to SunGrid Engine. It's a batch queuing system we use. It also supports interactive jobs and allows you to ask for a shell. It has some sort of vaguely silly things, like you can ask it to start an Xterm from a remote machine. Of course, requires horrible display settings, but that was in the early versions. It's one of several leading schedulers, and was released shortly after we started standing up the cluster as open source. It had been around quite a bit before that. We actually started with it because we had been using OpenPBS, which was the primary available option in the past. We found it sort of hopelessly unstable, and that was the uniform opinion of pretty much every operating system user at the time. So we got fed up with that and went ahead and did a Grid Engine port. Ron Chan had started a port, and then we completed it. First thing we ran into is Grid Engine has a truly unique build system. It's nearly 3,000 lines of C-shell script, which is named confusingly after a different parallel computing program, and each OS and architecture has a big blob of definitions. It also has a customized version of X's dependency generator, a lot of make files in various formats, and some weird use of autoconf because they use both Tiche and GNU make to support some of their parallel tools. And then recent versions also invoke Ant to build Java components, which seem to be becoming more and more required. Thus far, I've stubbed them all out and just have people build them themselves or download them in the ports. So what we ended up doing when we were working on that in the build system is we improved the multi-architecture support. When I took a look at it, at the time, every Linux variant and processor pair had its own set of definitions. So Linux for Alpha was a Linux, and there was actually a 2.4 or 2.6 version string for the different versions because they had different compilation. I said, okay, I don't want to deal with this. I'm only working on i386 and AMD 64 at the moment, but you know, at the time it looked like maybe IA 64 might go somewhere, and you know, who knows, we might do PowerPC or something in the future. And I didn't want to have to add big blocks of code for everyone. So we fixed that, generally cleaned it up. Actually, we're the first architecture to have sort of vaguely sensible and consistent path names instead of random ones, or not path names, but architecture names. And then added the ability to actually run autoconf and generate correct values instead of the previous approach of running it and then hacking up the results, which is what they had been doing. And then also the process by which you build it is still, even with this big pile of wrapper code, is still very strange and easy to screw up. So I actually created a FreeBSD port internally very early on. I've not yet supported Java in the build, haven't figured out what it needs, and to be honest, the GUI tools haven't been very interesting to me. Another thing that they've done, once we got that working, we had to tackle a bunch of portability defines. They both had, since the code is quite old, it predates the C standard definitions for format strings, and in some cases, like UID and GID, those aren't available in the C standard. They also had some really strange definitions, like this unsigned long 32, which is clearly not what they were looking for. In most cases, there were widely varying implementations. I think this came about because they wanted an unsigned integer on a Cray system, which they did support in tremendously complicated matters, since Cray broke POSIX when they did 32-bit, or 64-bit, rather. A lot of that sort of stuff could be simplified a lot today if they just threw out a few old versions, HPUX8, for instance. So SGE, like Ganglia, supports a number of host metrics, for instance, load, memory use, swap, and the like. They're a little more scattered around the source tree instead of congregating in a single per operating system file, but it's fairly straightforward to find them. We pretty much just looked for all the places where there were Linux ifdefs in the code and then implemented as necessary. One more interesting thing is that in Grid Engine they have a shepherd daemon that starts each job on a particular node and is the collector of all the statistics from the processes and resource use. But to track all the children, they needed some way to have a handle on them. Some operating systems like IRIX have a concept of a job ID. You can create a new job, and then you and all your children will be in that job. And since only root can do that, you can both track resource use, set resource limits, and kill the job. Instead, they came up with this clever but evil hack to support this tracking on other operating systems. What they've done is they've taken and added an extra supplemental group to the process, allocated out of an administrator-specified range, which shouldn't have any permission. Shouldn't grant any permissions. And then all of the children, since only root can change the supplemental group list, all of the children will also will have this. They then walk the process table and look for the group to find all the processes and periodically sum up all of the resource use. It's not the most efficient thing in the world, but it does in fact work. The current implementation that we have in the code uses libkvm, If I were doing it today, I would write it with sysctl. Now that we have all the good procstat statistics, things added for procstat, and the supplemental group retrieval stuff I just added a couple months ago. So another aside, this one on signal handling. I really love this quote down here. I won't go ahead and say it in its entirety, but it really does pretty much sum up, mess up in the copy and paste, sort of sums up how signal handling works. The SunGrid engine tended to use SIGSET for a while. They've actually been using SIGIGNORE more lately. I think probably the thing we're going to want to do here, and I did convince them in general to switch to SIGACTION as the only nominally portable thing, but it goes from a nice one-line, easy-to-understand thing to having to write five lines of code to just ignore a signal. Probably the big thing here is actually that FreeBSD should add SIGIGNORE and that family of signals. NetBSD has a nice implementation. I just haven't done it yet. Now on to OpenMPI. So as I was saying earlier, it's one of the main MPI implementations. MPICH is probably the other big one. There's a number of commercial implementations, either derived from one of the open source ones or independently implemented. Provides an extremely rich API. I think MPI version 1 had something like 200 commands, or 200 functions. You can actually write a program in about 6, but there's a lot of tools, or a lot of different ways to manipulate systems and to write efficient applications. I think MPI 2 has added another 100 or so functions. OpenMPI actually came out of a group, out of the LAM MPI group and several other MPI implementations, and was formed a few years ago. It's definitely one of the leading implementations. It's actually used by, Sun ships it as a commercial product, and I believe some other vendors do as well. This was actually one of the, for all its size, this was one of the easiest things we've ported. It has a highly modular code base. They use an awful lot of autoconf, which makes it a little uncomfortable to work with as someone who's not an autoconf wizard. But otherwise, it's pretty it's generally very modular, perhaps excessively so even. It built on many platforms at launch, largely I think because the HPC community knows that no operating system is going to last all that long as the dominant operating system. Most codes in HPC, most significant codes are probably over a decade old and have run on several CPU platforms and several operating systems. So that was important to them at the time. I think they also get funding from people like Sun and IBM and who have competing platforms. Really the only thing we had to add to get basic support was to add backtrace and backtrace symbols from glibc. Fortunately for at least i386 and AMD64, we already had a libexec info port. So it was just a simple matter of adding a dependency and adding some autoconf code to look for that, and then it worked. This is actually, I would say, one of the things we really do need to add to libc if we possibly can, and there was some mention of a developer summit, so hopefully someone will pick that up. One thing we haven't ported is a sort of a side project to OpenMPI, and for particular use, I think, in the InfiniBand implementations, they have a Linux CPU pinning and CPU set API. The portable Linux processor affinity, the reason it's portable is actually that both Red Hat and SUSE shipped versions of CPU set which are ABI incompatible with what eventually shipped in the Linux kernel. So there are three different ABIs. I believe they all use the same syscall number, and so this goes really well. So this code is actually their API is almost identical to ours. It's very, it's CPU set, it's set based, you know, you have the little sort of like FD sets. But yeah, this code is has this horrible evil in it where they have an init function which goes out and calls the syscalls directly with the syscall command, or the syscall function, and then looks at the error codes to figure out which ABI they're talking to. So it's a completely disgusting hack. We don't have to deal with any of that, but there would be a fair bit of value actually in adding FreeBSD support to PL API because it's being used more and more. It looks like Grid Engine's actually going to adopt it for some CPU pinning support. So one aside here, and a brief detour into the ports collection, OpenMPI is, in fact, one of several MPI implementations. I believe in the ports collection we have at least MPitch. I think we might still have at least one LAM implementation in there. Yes, yeah, we do. The problem here is that they all actually work fairly similarly. There's some small differences in startup, but all of them use an MPI run command to actually run the job. Some of them have an init before that. They all have compiler wrappers, usually called MPICC, MPIC++, etc., to hide all of the library junk and include path junk from the users. And for extra fun, many users want to be able to use multiple compilers. So right now, the biggest annoyance I have is that we install them in all sorts of different places. I'd kind of like to, as the porter, I'd like to go here, except that's open. That should be OpenMPI, not MPitch 2, but I'd like to get them all installing in a similar location, and it'd be really nice eventually if somebody could write a wrapper similar to the Java VM wrapper, so users could just choose what they wanted, and for ports that wanted an MPI, there would be a standard way to find it, whereas today there's not. Each port has to have a set of build options to build with a different MPI. So a quick summary of portability issues. We have schema conflicts. Paul Henning suggested some approaches in DES to resolve those. And they're just, to some extent, they're just a fact of life. But they're definitely something to think about with this type of code. The V6 socket behavior is another minor annoyance. Fortunately, you can simply open a socket for both V6 and for both the V6 and V4 address. And then you're done. It should work on every operating system. And I've not heard of any problems. So that's a resolvable issue. Weird build systems are just one of those things you'll run into. Grid Engine's remarkably unique. Fortunately, most of the time, it seems like more that you run into an odd make replacement. But nothing too big. There's this poor choice of data types I'm referring to mostly. Old code that uses weird or inconsistent variables, or because of like that long 32 in Grid Engine, there were a number of other examples in their code base. So another historical issue, we're actually getting much better at it, is just lack of good interfaces to get to some data, which then necessitates doing things like groveling through KVM, which is why, for instance, we walk the process table in memory in the Grid Engine implementation of the process tracker. Today, we don't have to do that, but in the past, that was a big issue. And there are definitely other programs out there. Probably the biggest one is FSTAT, or not FSTAT, the non-FreeBSD version. LSOF is the one that the author is constantly complaining about, the lack of interfaces for the information they need. Finally, signal handler setup. SigAction is really the only portable option, but we really should be implementing the other POSIX interfaces to the extent possible. The signal, you definitely should not use signal. It's specified in a completely meaningless manner. Because of the historical BSD and System 5 variants being completely different. We also need to get some form of the libexec info functionality into libc. It's just too useful not to have. Quick set of a few things that I think someone ought to port, and maybe I'll get to eventually. PL API, as I already talked about. PAPI, the performance analysis, it's a performance analysis toolkit. We actually have a port that George has been updating recently to take advantage of HWPMC. And there are a number of tools out there that use that. Another thing that would be interesting, that I looked into a little but haven't had much time for, is the Eclipse Parallel Toolkit. It uses the Eclipse C functionality and then attempts to add parallel debugger support, though in a somewhat inelegant manner. I believe they're just starting a whole lot of GDBs using one portion of the OpenMPI runtime. And finally, for the STARD problem, if anyone's looking for a really interesting challenge, one of the leading clustering platforms on Linux is a system called ROX. They've ported their toolkit now to Solaris, and already their primary motivation for doing so is that they didn't want to touch Solaris any more than they had to, and they wanted to buy Thumpers to run as file servers. So they ported it to Solaris, so a lot of the refactoring's been done. People I talked to said it's probably about a month of work, but it would be an interesting project if somebody wanted a little bigger thing to do. So some conclusions. As part of building our cluster, we've ported a number of tools to FreeBSD, both these ones I've talked about and some others such as PSSH. There definitely are portability challenges, both in terms of general issues with the applications and some FreeBSD-specific issues. I think we're actually getting much better over time, and there's some steady improvement. I think PAPI actually represents a big opportunity to grab market share. Linux HPC community has been trying to get this thing into Linux for close to a decade now, and Linus doesn't like it, so it's not in. And so basically, everybody out there, even people who have Red Hat licenses, runs a patched kernel because they all want the tools, and there's no other way to get it. So, in short, if you're interested, go out, port some more stuff. There's lots of interesting things out there to do. And there's a disclaimer. So, I have about a minute for questions, if anyone wants any. George?
So, what tools run on top of Poppy? Because I'm using it.
I don't have names right offhand because I keep seeing them at the supercomputing conference and then forgetting about them because they don't have a BSD port. But it's definitely on my list of things to go write down at the next conference. There's a number of people building graphical tools to analyze performance, trying to get something that scientists can use. If you Google for PAPI, you'll often find them, but it's kind of a pain. Anyone else? No, I don't do HA. In principle, if somebody wrote a checkpointing toolkit and integrated that had semantics similar to one of the common Linux ones, we could incorporate that support into something like Grid Engine. I've essentially ignored Grid Engine has some limited high availability functionality. But it's all got a giant single point of failure, and then at some point you got to put it on some storage. And right now that's NFSv4 storage, which means you have to run it on Solaris to get any decent locking support. So they have some. I've ignored it because I think it's just smoke and mirrors. But I think it's interesting. I'd still like to see checkpointing done at some point. It would help a lot of people. But it's hard to do right, and hard to do in a way that, and it's not just doing it at the operating system level. You then have to do it in the scheduler and in the MPI implementation, because you can't just take down, you can't just restart a process with TCP sessions in it. Next, anyone else? Yes. A wide array of applications. Fair number of genetic algorithms codes, some parameter sweeps. If you go to our website at arrow.org, there's a write-up about 10 years old now on some GPS coverage studies on the constellation. That's the paper that's on there is prior to the cluster, but they've used the cluster since to perform much larger analyses. And other than that, it's, you know, we run standard, some standard codes, like some explosives modeling codes or fluid codes. We work in every area of space, from rockets to satellites to, you know, ground systems. So I never know what my engineers are going to be running on these things. They just show up and run them and break things. Anyone else? Yep. Thank you all for listening.